This is Akashwani. In the program Spotlight, now we bring you a discussion on 29th Annual United Nations Climate Change Conference, COP29. The participants are Professor C.K. Vashne, environmentalist, and Suruchi Bhadwal, director, the Energy and Resources Institute. Moderator is Lalima Aneja Dang, anchor.
The 29th edition of COP, that's Conference of Parties, is being held in Baku, Azerbaijan, from the 11th of November, that is today, to 22nd November. The theme of COP29 is In Solidarity for a Green World. Of course, the crux of COP is to address problem of climate crisis, for example, limiting global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius and net zero emissions by 2050. Let's listen in to Mukhtar Babayev, President of 29th session of Conference of the Parties, while addressing the opening ceremony of COP29.
It is wonderful to finally see you all here as we complete the first decade after the Paris Agreement. We will host this conference in an inclusive, transparent and party-driven manner. COP29 is an unmissable moment to chart a new path forward for everyone.
Well, we heard Mukhtar Babayev, president of 29th session of Conference of the Parties, moving on. For more on COP29, we are now joined by Ms. Suruchi Bhadwal, Director Terry, who is in Baku, Azerbaijan, and Professor C.K. Varshney, environmentalist. Welcome to Akashwani.
Thank you, madam.
Professor Varshney, after food security, we are now talking about energy security. Our own ambition of renewable energy has increased target from 500 gigawatt by 2030 to 600 gigawatt by 2032. On the other hand, there seems to be a renewed interest in coal. Is there a paradox there?
It's a very much big paradox. You see that the real problem of climate change is because of the fossil fuel consumption, which is steadily rising. And as a result, carbon dioxide concentration in the atmosphere in last 200 years have increased by over 50%, which is a real cause of climate change, global warming, drought, heat waves, and erratic rainfall, which precipitates and creates a problem of flooding and many other issues for our farming community. And the economic downfall of such an activity is very serious and very permeating to the whole society. And let me just give you a few background to this.
Gee.
It was the climate change convention which was there, in which a large number of governments have agreed to come together to deal with the problem of emerging climate change, which is a very serious issue, in which the big emitters like United States and EU and China and all that, they were party to it. But somehow when Trump administration came, their first stint of Trump administration, they decided to walk out. And their belief was that all this is not real and the anthropogenic sources are not responsible for this and everything is fine. And I think the scientific evidence, which was becoming increasingly more compelling, was completely set aside and they decided to walk out. And that was a very big jolt to the climate movement. After the Biden administration, they rejoined and they came with the vigor to support and move forward. But with the latest results of the elections in US, Mr. Trump is back again. And in his climate campaign, he has mentioned and given an indication that he will perhaps give further leverage to fossil fuel, coal mining. Mm-hmm. Now, these are some of the things which people are anticipating. The second important point is that the real issue is that how do we find money to really support the vulnerable countries which are not responsible for increasing climate change or for high carbon dioxide emission, but in terms of their impact is far more. And this is totally unrelated to their contribution. In fact, their contribution is nil, but they are only at the suffering end. So I think how they can be supported so that their damage control can be rectified. At the same time, they are also given enough technology as well as technical know-how to develop resilience to face the degrading climate and the punishing climate, which is foreseeable. So these are the issues. As regard the carbon dioxide is concerned, I must say that now the current level of carbon dioxide is 430 parts per million, which is very high. Mm-hmm. In fact, during 2023, we have already increased by 1.6%. So instead of realizing and adhering to the Paris Convention, which says 1.5, reduce climate emission, we are continuously increasing. So you can see that all these COPs which have taken place from Berlin to Baku, we have been talking, and our talking has become louder and louder, and actions have become smaller and smaller. So here is the dilemma which is going to play again at Baku, and we have to see. We have to be optimistic, but I think the issues are real. And the real issue is that who is going to provide the cost, damage, rectification, energy transition cost, as well as for resilience building by the global south, which the global north is required to provide and which they are dragging their feet. In fact, they are responsible for most of the climate change. The legacy loading of the climate by carbon dioxide is so high by these developed countries that they do not own the responsibility which they should. In fact, if they are together, then only the global welfare is ensured, because global is an integrated whole, and therefore it cannot be compartmentalized. Climate cannot be partitioned, and therefore climate is a joint, I should say, asset, and on which I think everybody has to behave responsibly according to their own contribution and according to their carbon dioxide emission.
Suruchiji, how do you expect the outcome of COP29 to be? Because there is a kind of a tug of war. There are developing nations on one side who want the finance, and the developed nations on the other side who are not willing to fund. They're not happy to fund. So how do you expect? Do you think that there could be a stalemate, as it has happened in many such climate change mitigation programs? So sometimes we reach a stalemate. How do you see the outcome of this COP29?
So it's a very crucial COP from the point of view of the decision that has to be taken at this particular COP. And this COP, basically the expectations are with regards to the new collective quantified goal on climate finance. That basically means that there's some kind of a decision making around the commitments that countries have made to each other with regards to providing the finance to help countries reach their desired goals, whether it has been basically stated in their NDCs or to go beyond that, because we very clearly know that the ambition levels of countries have to be far more than what the NDCs have to state today. So that means we do not have the finance on the table even to meet the current NDCs on the table for raising the ambition further to be able to meet the Paris Agreement goals that have been stated. So far, there had been a commitment for $100 billion, which of course, I think past many years, it had been difficult to have those kind of resources available to the developing countries. So I think it's a big concern. And if the finance is not made available to many countries, possibly it could lead to the non-compliance of these countries to meet their NDCs that they have outlined.
Professor Vashni, when it comes to pollution, now with US having backed out so far, where do you see the Troika, Azerbaijan, Brazil and UK going? What is their stance?
I think Brazil is very serious and wants to really focus on climate change control. They have really stopped the kind of deforestation that they were going on, which has come down. There is a lot of illicit activity which is going on in terms of deforestation, which is there. And more than that, because of the climate change, rainfall is low, and therefore there is a fire and forests are burning all over the place. And you can see what has happened in Valencia in Spain, where unprecedented flood has come, which has really triggered very great discontent among the population.
California
and you
fire
can
zones.
See the California fire, yes, yeah. And you can see the Australian fire,
yes.
And you can see fire in our own country.
Absolutely.
Which are increasing in number, and both in geographical space. Mm-hmm. So I think all this is contributing another factor, mm-hmm, of carbon dioxide emission, apart from the wars which are raging so heavily during this period. All these are new factors which have emerged to add to the loading of the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Time is short. Our expectation is high. Action is low, and it is here that we have to step up.
Ms. Bhadwal, do you see the shadow of the president-elect, Mr. Donald Trump, looming large on this COP29 summit?
Look, there are several factors under play. When we talk about how countries are affected and what they need to do, and of course, the focus has been on mitigation. Today, we are also locked into climate change, and every country is reeling from the pressures of that, whether it's a developed or a developing country. The consequences of the risks that we are experiencing are being observed in every country. So the costs are at their end also with regards to coping with, you know, responding to the risks that they are also facing. So resources are being diverted, definitely, whether it is because of reeling back from the pandemic pressures or because of other reasons. Because if you just look at 2023 and 2024, forget going much more in the past. I think world over, there were floods, there were heat waves, there were forest fires, the way the countries were affected, etc. And of course, it has had an impact on people. It has had an impact on the economies of countries. So there is diversion that's happening where they also need to prioritize and kind of send resources. So ideally, there are challenges that every country is facing. And thereby, you see that, you know, you're not able to see the level of commitments being met on the other hand. Also, the fact that even if these commitments were being met, I don't think so. It can be something that you can hinge on to for a longer time. Because at the end of the day, the tune to which you need resources to be able to adapt and mitigate both in countries. India has made that request for $1 trillion support just to leverage the private sector resources for supporting climate action. So it's not even basically saying that $1 trillion that we are basically requesting is not basically to have an ultimate impact and action implemented. We are saying we're going to use those resources to trigger the private sector in terms of investing in action on the mitigation and the adaptation side. So that's the tune of resources we are basically talking about. Ideally, I think the ultimate objective has to be that you have to kind of get your own house in order. So countries will have to focus and see what they can do the best at their end, whether it is through the public sector resources or a mixed approach of public-private partnerships or trying to unlock the finances in the private sector towards climate mitigation and adaptation. And there's no other way that any country can achieve this. I think you'll need to get all important entities on board to provide their finances to help trigger the action and get the implementation going.
Moving forward, you're at the scene of action. You're in Baku. India's requirement to fund climate change mitigation program is around 2.5 trillion rupees. Where do you see India going, and what has been India's stand on COP29?
Well, I think this was a statement made by the Prime Minister. So India has that expectation from the world that it will receive adequate support for it to trigger, you know, the kind of action that is needed within the country that needs to be scaled up. There's a lot, if you look at inwardly what India is doing, we have been at a country level trying to promote the right signals through various policies and plans that the government has basically introduced. You see the focus is on biofuels, it's on mixing of fuels, the focus is on hydrogen and promoting green hydrogen development and use, the focus is on electric vehicles. So if you see on the mitigation side also, there is a shift that we are trying to give within the country. And inwardly looking, I think that's the most that we can do. But, you know, when it comes to the scales that we're talking about, where an impact can be created, etc., possibly we need far more resources and investments in technology, new technology, access and availability to technology that can basically give us the boost with regards to the scales that we require, because we can't forget that we're also a large market and a consumption of technology. We are 1.4 billion people. So one third of the world is somewhere lying between us and China. So these two countries matter a lot in terms of what the people in these countries are doing, what technologies are they using, are they moving towards the greener path, etc. or not, because that will kind of show up at the global scale with regards to the ultimate impact that's happening at the global scale. So India's expectations definitely to receive that support to help India achieve its own goals, which it has committed to. And therefore, it's not a big ask, I would say. With the other efforts that I was talking about, those are all country-level efforts, and India is putting its own money there in those areas. But to ultimately have the kind of impact that we are talking about, I think we need far more resources and support. And therefore, India is definitely going to look at that finance support that it needs to leverage climate action.
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much, Professor Vashni, for talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Suruchi Bhadwalji, for talking to us.
Thank you so much.
You were listening to a discussion on 29th Annual United Nations Climate Change Conference, COP29. The participants were Professor C.K. Varshney, environmentalist, and Suruchi Bhadwal, director, the Energy and Resources Institute. Moderator was Lalima Aneja Dang, anchor.